Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Kathy Sohn. Kathy is an Army veteran whose current work focuses on the body memory process, which explores beliefs generated during childhood and how they impact our lives moving on into adulthood. So welcome to the show, Kathy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background before we get more into what this body memory process is all about?
Hey, Scott, thank you for having me here. So a little bit about me. I started out after I graduated from high school. I started out in college and I didn't have a really great experience because I think I was still trying to kind of figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I was very distracted. So I had music training, a voice and piano when I was growing up. And when I got to this college campus and I found they had a fine arts building, I was in that building more than at the piano than I was in the library, even though I was studying pre-med at the time. And so that's why I was, you know, just a little confused. Well, do you want to be a doctor or do you want to be a musician? You know, what's going on? And I spent some time trying to work that out. And, one night I was with my parents and I felt like it was kind of like, you know, when you hit rock bottom and you're like, this isn't working. And it was impacting my grades because I wasn't applying myself and my self-esteem went downhill. And my dad, who worked for General Dynamics, he was a contractor with the Navy in Connecticut building submarines, said, you know, I have an idea, you know, we'll talk about it at breakfast. So this one, he said, you know, I think maybe the military may be a good plan for you. And so I agreed and I actually went with a Navy recruiter who ultimately handed me over to the Army because of my VAB test results. And at the time, the Army had the loan forgiveness program. So all those college loans, those guaranteed student loans that I had, while I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do in college, I was going to be able to take care of them. And then also, of course, there's the opportunity to take, you know, college courses in the Army. So it seemed like a perfect plan. And it really was. So here I went from someone who wasn't applying themselves to being, been into code school, by the way. So I was, if anybody is familiar with the old, I don't know if they have the same nomenclature anymore. In the old world, RFDF, you know, I was No 5 Hotel. So I did Morse code collection and I was up at Fort Devens at the USAISD. So it was the school up there. And I graduated first in my class. In fact, they didn't even cut orders for me until, you know, maybe a couple months later. So they let me be a sort of a part of the cadre and helping the other students. So I think that's where my journey finally began toward having successes, finding that place of excellence within myself, just earning awards and all of that with the military was so great. I only did that for 4 years. I knew that I didn't really want I went in saying, I don't want to do this as a career. And I was actually recommended for OCS. And that year, there were so many applicants that they could pick college graduates. And so while I had, you know, some college courses under my belt, I was in that pile that was just sort of taken off the top and I wasn't even considered. And maybe that was fate. Maybe it wasn't meant to be. But anyway, that the military did so much for me because not only did I get my self-esteem, I also started my political science courses when I was stationed in Okinawa. So the University of Maryland had a presence on Kadena Air Force Base. And so that's when I started. And I actually graduated with my bachelor's right about the time I got out of the Army. And just 2 weeks before, 2 weeks after. And then I immediately went into a job with the Department of Defense. And then I spent 36 years there. It was one of those jobs that I can't really, you know, talk a lot about it, but I had lots of different assignments and I ended up in 3 different war zones. And so when I was in the Army, I didn't have that opportunity, but it was actually when I was a civilian that I spent some time in Sarajevo, some time in Baghdad, and really most of the time in Afghanistan, where I did a 6-month deployment in 2015. That was, you know, that was just really an interesting time. I had very young children, but thank God for FaceTime. And so you know, be able to stay connected.
Right.
Good that families have that technology these days. It must have been really rough before that.
Yeah, for sure. I know when I deployed to Afghanistan in 2010, some of these technologies, like the video calls and stuff, they were around, but they weren't quite as popular as they were, you know, just even just a few years afterwards. And even just the internet connection speeds that we had wasn't all that reliable. So, you know, you might get on, but then it gets choppy and, you know, so you get a little bit of a call, but then it kind of cuts out and that kind of stuff. But we did have internet connection and, you know, so there was a much more immediate, you know, response as far as, you know, being able to communicate back home, as opposed to people who maybe, you know, think way back to, you know, the World War I, World War II, even earlier generations where people were off for months, years at a time. And the only communication was just through written letters back home. And, you know, that's just got to be hard to, you know, communicate back home and, you know, read about your children growing up and all the things that they've experienced and accomplished. And here you are on a battlefield, like, oh, wow, great. I just get this piece of paper and I don't even get to experience any of that stuff. It must have been a just completely different time, you know, back then. I do feel fortunate that we exist in this time period, right?
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Yeah. So let's jump into the body memory process. Could you explain to me and the listeners what that process is all about and how you got involved in working with this?
Absolutely. So first I'll talk about how I got involved, and then I'll kind of set the stage by talking about the sort of the problem that it addresses. And then I'll talk about the actual work of the memory process. So 4th of July, 1994, I met my husband to be, and back at that time, he was the one who had created this work. So that's when I first learned about what this work was. And he was just starting to write a book. And that's how I really then became really deeply immersed in it, because I ended up as his editor. And so I was going through a lot of his book, very long. But to talk a little bit about David, so his name was David William Soane, and he had a near-death experience when he was 14 years old. He came from a military family. His dad was Air Force. He was Brigadier General. And at the time, they were in Vandenberg Air Force Base. And he said that the military doctors had done everything they could for him. They even had him on some experimental drugs. But I guess this is back in 1961, and they didn't really know what to do for that type of an infection. And they, you know, he had no respirations, no pulse or a period of time. And then his dad was looked at the monitor and said, hey, you know, what's going on there? And he actually had made his way back. He said he came back. He had a near-death experience. He came back not knowing exactly what his mission was, but he knew he came back to do something, you know, important for the world. And he came to understand what that was through his own personal experience of doctors telling him that he was never going to be truly well. He wanted to really be in the military. Again, he had a military family. He was even in ROTC, but ultimately told him that because he had lung issues, which he never let really, that he was very active. He did a lot of activities, sports and things, but just couldn't meet those standards because the cilia in his lungs didn't work properly. And he would actually have to cough every now and then to kind of do what naturally happens for us, because again, the disease had done that. But, you know, he was like, okay, you know, he's on this personal quest for what is wellness. And when he got out of college, he had a couple of advanced degrees. And then kind of stepped out into the human potential movement, took a lot of trainings, read everything he could, just went and traveled. And he pulled together this work based upon a number of contributing pieces of research, but three major underlying things that I'd like to talk about. One is that our beliefs help shape our reality. And I think that's a pretty commonly accepted thing, even in science. I mean, you can pick Scientific American now and find articles about that. And it goes back as far back as scripture about, you know, it's done unto you as you believe. And I think that as humanity, we still don't really get that because we still don't really pay close attention to the words we choose, you know, or the thoughts we have. And that don't understand that how that makes us, that gives us so much power really to create our lives. And so that's one underpinning. Another is the mind-body connection. And there have been scientists that have come along in the past 20, 30 years who have come to understand that the body is, Dr. Candace Pert, who is a researcher, said that our body pretty much is our subconscious mind for all intents and purposes, because the subconscious mind knows everything, but it's inaccessible. But the body has been found to really bring us those messages about what's going on. That's a major underpinning of this work. And I'll talk about Dr. Burt's work again in a moment. The third major underpinning is that they have found that babies are in the womb are actually, you know, quite aware as far as being able to, you know, pick up on things energetically, you know, what they can hear. And while they don't have language, you know, they're on an energetic level, they are able to process things, and things really start back then. In fact, Dr. Bruce Lipton, if anyone is familiar with him, he wrote Biology of Belief, talks about how we are in theta state from the womb until about 7 years. That's, you know, that's the brainwave state of imagination and, you know, emotions. And, you know, that age group is really ripe for doing what I'll talk about in a minute. And that's like creating of these beliefs from, you know, personal experiences. So that's really the third area about it, is about babies and children. And so the work is, you know, is it sort of can be boiled down to simply when we are in that womb to 7 year state, we are forming our core beliefs, and we do this based upon often traumatic experiences, but they can be just highly emotional ones. Not necessarily, the emotions don't necessarily have to be bad. So I'll give you an example of a actually sort of a good experience that actually can create what David termed a vow, which is a, you know, basically a very strong belief, a very strong statement about life or myself or about other people. So say I'm 3 years old and I'm sitting on my daddy's knee and he's very busy. You know, it's hard to get his attention. I don't know, maybe he's in the military and he's deployed a lot, but I'm with him and I'm so excited to be with him. And he says to me, you know, you'll always be my good little girl. And somewhere, you know, it's a happy time, and I sort of log it in that, okay, I'll always be your good little girl. Like, that's how to get love. That's how to be in the world. Because at that age, we're trying to figure out, how do we get love? You know, how do we get support? You know, how do we survive in this world?
Right.
There's another point I wanted to make here when I'm talking about, it can be positive emotions. It can also be what someone might say is actually could be a good vow, such as, I'll always be happy. Wow. You know, who wouldn't want to always be happy, right? That seems like a pretty good one to have. But remember, it's I'll always be happy. But there are times in our lives when it's not healthy to be happy. It's much healthier to grieve, to mourn, to give everything its due process. And so that's when, and as David would say, anytime we have something that we're not aware of, you know, it's in our subconscious and it's running us, it's not good. It's not something that's life affirming. It's something that's actually sort of running the show instead of allowing us to have conscious choice in the moment, which is when we truly are powerful in our lives. And so the body memory process is about, you know, about addressing, to discover those vows. But before I get into that, I mentioned Dr. Candace Pert. And I want to make a point here because this is very, very powerful, and it's important to those who are trying to understand emotions and trauma and perhaps dealing with PTSD. So she found, back in the 70s, she was trying to find the opiate receptor. Researchers at the time figured that if there is a drug that has an effect in the body, if it works the way, you know, we want it to, there must be some receptor for it. And so they were looking for one for opiates, and they did find it, and they realized that, okay, why is it there, right? Not because it's anticipating something that will come in from outside the body, but because there is a natural opiate, if you will, in our body called endorphins. And so they started looking at this more and more, and they found that neuropeptides, you know, neurotransmitters, hormones, you know, everything has receptors in the body, all over the body, actually. So not just in one part. And so when we talk about the body as is basically our subconscious mind, you can start to see how, you know, emotions, and Dr. Peart said, deep emotion, deep trauma can put down deep roots in the body, because that's how there's actually a scientific explanation for the mind-body connection. That's why her work was so phenomenal, because through the ages, you know, lots of people have been talking about the mind-body connection, but you had to be in that camp that was, well, there's science over here, and then there's this, well, we're not so sure. It's all based upon, you know, folklore and, you know, just traditions that are, you know, alternative medicine. Oh, but no, science all of a sudden was like, oh, okay, you know, there really is a basis for this. And I think there was a big turning point there. People started to come along, like, I don't know if your listeners who are maybe trying to find solutions for PTSD have heard of Bessel van der Kolk, who wrote Your Body Keeps the Score. And it was actually after his work that the Department of Veterans Affairs started to pay closer attention to PTSD, and that it actually was, you know, something that it was important to help people to deal with, because, you know, he was explaining how it was with trauma, it sort of, you know, hijacks the brain, the part, you know, you kind of remain kind of stuck more in that limbic part and not, you know, not so much in the rational part, and that you actually do relive experiences. You know, an experience maybe that civilians can relate to is, I'm in a car accident maybe 3 years ago, and just before that impact, I could smell the rubber, I could hear the squealing of the brakes, and now it's 3 years later, and I'm witnessing a car accident right near me, and I can hear the brakes. I don't know if I can maybe smell the rubber, but there's all of those that sensory input, and I'm right back in the middle of my own experience. That's how it works, and you know, it's very powerful stuff. And so, you know, if people are dealing with trauma now, a big key is how we were able to deal with it as children. And van der Kolk actually talked about if children had good attachment, right? If they had parents who, you know, showed them a lot of love, and they were able to maybe work out some of their emotions. It's still, they're all about, you know, always and never, and everything's a big drama, right? Very glad. And so if parents are able to kind of help them work that out, and maybe even unknowingly kind of stave off some of these vows, that, you know, the children might have, and this is what van der Kolk says, have greater resources and tools to be able to handle traumatic events that happen later in life. And so, you know, I believe that people who might be struggling with traumatic experiences now, it might be very helpful for them to do work such as the body memory process, to be able to discover, okay, well, you know, what was going on back when I was little. And a lot of people don't necessarily remember. I mean, who remembers their time in the womb or their birth? Right. You get a rare one that comes along, and there's been some researchers that talk about that, or even early childhood. But it's not about what you were in your mind. It's the body that's going to give us these clues.
So your body is hanging on to these traumatic, or I don't want to say traumatic because they're not all traumatic. Like you said, sometimes they're just maybe just out of the ordinary, whether they're a really good experience that someone had, and you can hang on to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. An emotional, you know, one way or the other. It could be a bad emotion. It could be a good emotion. It could be traumatic. It could be just a really happy occasion or something, right? And your body hangs on to these over time. And like you said, a lot of times we don't remember the specific incident or the, you know, you're too young. You're not going to remember the day of your birth, most likely, right? But we might also block out certain things, traumatic things that have happened. Our minds can play those tricks on us where we block out those things, but our body still hangs on to those memories, is what I'm understanding, right? And does that cause like tension or pain or something in the body? Is that like, how does that work?
Absolutely. So I'll talk about that in a moment. I do want to, at this point, I have a few vows I'm going to read here that I have sort of handy because I think sometimes if you hear what some of them sound like, you can go, oh, yeah, you know, that kind of makes sense. And remember it, it's not necessarily trauma, even though often it is. It's the emotion. These that I'm going to read are largely about traumatic experiences. So fear can generate vows like, this is scary. There is never enough. Alone is safe. Guilt, everything is my fault. I must be doing something wrong. Everything changes because of me. Despair, they don't care about me. Nobody listens to me. Nobody wants me. And loneliness, everybody leaves me. They don't need to love me. I'm okay. Or, you know, I'm always alone. And, you know, I work with kids in the foster care community because they are so deeply traumatized. I work with their parents actually to teach them how to work with these kids, hopefully to help them from not having so many of these vows that it really sets them up for a difficult life. And, you know, these are, you know, largely about, you know, that type of beginning. But not all of the vows, again, are quite so kind of dramatic and about, you know, such a traumatic beginning in life. You know, there can be some that are, you know, just related to something that was important to the child at the time. And they're like, okay, this is the way to be. So you asked about where they show up, you know, in the body. So they have found, Louise Hay talked a lot about, you know, she wrote, You Can Heal Your Life, had a map. We have a map in the body memory process too, which I'll talk about in a moment. Guilt is often felt, you know, in the hip areas. So that's one place that can show up. You know, fear and despair and loneliness, all those kinds of emotions tend to be kind of at the root chakra. So the body map that David put together for this work is based upon the energy system of the body. If anyone is familiar with the chakra system, it comes from the sort of the Eastern Ayurveda and like the Eastern side that has been working with sort of body medicine and body with energy for a long time. And so with there's the root chakra, which is about being here now. This is my connection here to being in this world. And it tends to sort of to deal with those basic energies about kind of like if it's familiar with Abraham Maslow, you know, the hierarchy of needs and about those basic needs being met. And then as you progress up the body, there's the creative chakra that's in the lower abdomen. The solar plexus is about personal power. The heart is about love. The throat is communication. In the middle of the forehead is intuition. And then there's a spiritual chakra at the crown. And so we have a body map that David had created about, you know, right side is more about masculine issues, left side feminine. The front of the body is how I relate to the world. And the back of the body is about how the world relates to me. So I can give you an example, you know, I carried a knot in my left scapula area for like the longest time until I did the work after I had been involved in this work. And I did the work on myself. Go ahead. I think I called David my poster child. I have probably, you know, the longest list of vows because I had quite a traumatic beginning in life, but I was adopted and the trauma has to do with the before adoption. But my adoptive mom, of course, I think was very protective of me, you know, because of what I had come from and always tried to just kind of smother me, you know, with love and always be in my affairs. And so that didn't sit well with me, I think, because especially as I became an adult. And so this pain and tension in my back was, if you look at the map, left side, you know, powerful female in my life. It was about how she was relating to me. And it was between my throat chakra and my heart chakra. And it decoded to about how a powerful female in my life was expressed love to me. It's like, whoop, that there it is. There, hi, mom. There you are. Yeah. And so, yeah, I had, when I did the work on myself, you know, I had a whole bunch of stuff from my birth trauma, from my birth mom. And then there was like all the stuff that came along with my adoptive family. So, yeah. Yay. Whole lot to work on.
But having a map like that and being able to look at the specific areas, like you said, you had that issue on your kind of shoulder area. It's kind of right between the throat, the heart, kind of almost dead center in between the two, right? And, you know, it helps you kind of pinpoint what areas to focus on, right? Because it's clearly it's bothering you enough to the point where it's causing you that discomfort. And it's like, okay, well, let's focus on that because obviously it's an issue, right? And so by having a map like that, that might help identify some of these issues that people are coping with, right? From their childhood.
Right. So I'll talk about the body memory process now, and I'll factor that in. Exactly what you said is right on. So in the discovery part of the process, so it's a discovery process and then a homework process. For discovery, it's really there's really two ways to get at, you know, what's really going on. One is sort of an objective phase where you're actually kind of looking outside the body for answers. And then there's the subjective, which is what you just talked about. I have a video with a multimedia course that I have that kind of walks you through. It's almost about an hour long and walks you through a whole series of questions. David used to say, you know, questions begin thought, right? The questions are very powerful to kind of get at, you know, you're trying to discover something. And if mom's available, you know, yay, because that's, you know, she'll hold a lot of those answers. And a lot of people find that they'll talk to mom and she's like, well, yeah, this happened, but gee, I almost forgot about that. And I didn't think it was important, but now I'm an adult. This is going on. And wow, what was actually going on for mom back then is affecting my life now, you know? So it's a wonderful, that interaction people have with mom and with other family members as they go through these questions and start to figure out what was going on. It can be very healing. And you know, things can come up that really maybe need to, right, within families. So there's that, the objective part. And then the subjective is, yes, what's going on? So first, it's what's going on in my body, which I'll talk about in a moment. It's also what's going on in my life. So, you know, Dr. Lipton, Bruce Lipton, I talked about earlier, talking about how he calls it programming, you know, those core beliefs until we're 7 years old. And he says, you want to figure out what's going on. Take a look at your life. What's working well? What's not? You know, just take a real good inventory across. So not just health, which again, we'll talk about the body in a moment, but also relationships, finances, what's going on with my career and with, you know, with our veterans, maybe how well am I, you know, integrating after leaving military service, right? There we can take a look at all of those areas that may be causing us some, you know, some anything from just, kind of, you know, it's a little bit annoying all the way to, wow, this is a really huge problem, right?
Right.
So that's another way. There's questions also to kind of get you to think about those areas. And then, yes, our wonderful resource, the body. And I have I think it's at this point about 61 pages body map, which for lack of an app, which I would like to develop at some point for this, because I think it could be very powerful to help. It's a sort of an interactive hyperlink PDF for looking at that body map that I described, sort of bumped up against going on 1,000 vows that we've collected over David doing this work for almost 30 years. So, and I don't know if I mentioned earlier that I lost my husband. Did I mention that?
You didn't. I did notice you using a lot of the past tense. So I kind of assumed, but I didn't want to pry into that either. But yeah. So sorry for your loss, but you know, I'm in a way, I'm also glad to see that his work is continuing on, even, you know, through this episode, through all the work that you're doing. It's kind of a nice tribute that you're doing to him and all the work that he's done.
Yes. So, yes, I lost David almost 3 years ago now. I was on my last assignment in Hawaii, actually, in supporting, you know, Indo-PACOM with my work. And David became very ill, went downhill very fast. But yes, I mean, before he left, you know, he had taken such good notes and, you know, he had pulled this body map together. You know, he had collected all of these vows that, yes, we were able to put this map together. And so people can, you know, they can look at what's going on with the pain or tension in their body, or even a disease, like a chronic disease usually is where it will show up. You know, acute issues, you know, they say that even like the body's giving you a message, even if it's an acute problem, but you know, that tends to come and go quick, and you may or not get the question, the issue that's going on. And sometimes, you know, we get those acute issues and then over time, maybe things start showing up more chronically because we're not listening to the message, right? So, you know, I personally believe that things start in the body as imbalances, right? Water, electric, you know, any number of systems that are supposed to be in balance when we're paying attention to our drinking water and our eating and our environment. And then we get, you know, then we start getting these little messages. And then the disease, if something blows into a disease, it's because, you know, all of these other more gentler ways of telling us that there's something going on, or we haven't been listening. And so that's all the different ways to figure out what's going on. And then when you go, okay, you know, I've got low back pain, and I don't know, I've got, I'm trying to say I have diabetes, or I have some type of pain, or I have migraines. By the way, I'll talk about that in a moment. It's an interesting thing that came, a pattern that came out of David working with clients who have migraines. I'd like to mention that in a moment. But just, you know, then someone can take this body map and say, okay, and zoning into where, what's going on in that, what bowels show up, you know, in that area, like it can help them to do that self-discovery. It's not perfect, I would say. I think the perfect solution is having David Sohn in the room because, you know, I can't, unfortunately, we weren't able to clone him before he left us, but he would sit in a room with someone and within 3 hours, you know, he would zone it, like maybe a whole list of vows, and they'd be off, you know, to do their homework. And then he got, I have about 25 case studies that are very, you know, very well documented about what were their vows, what happened, you know, what was going on in their life, and then how things changed after they did the body memory process. I have a few of them up on my website, and I'm turning more into sort of infographics to show people, you know, this is how this has helped other people. There's an initial book that David, I mentioned that he was writing, that we published in 2004, called Escaping the Lab. And that has an appendix in the back, several appendices, one that has all those vows in sort of a table form, not interactive like we have now. So there's a resource there. And then I'm also working on my own book now. So I'm hoping for, you know, within about 6 months or so to have that out, to really be able to pull in some of the research that's happened since we, you know, published the first book, to help people connect with, wow, you know, this really has a good scientific basis. And this is really powerful stuff.
Yeah, you know, I am thinking about all of this stuff and how a lot of this stuff from childhood, you know, shapes your beliefs or vows that you're talking about, and how you think about yourself, your self-worth, your fears, your different things that go on, right? And now I'm thinking about the veterans, you know, because a lot of the people who are listening to this are either veterans or their loved ones, or, you know, people like that. And specifically thinking about these people, I'm trying to make the connection here between some of these maybe childhood traumas or childhood emotional events that take place, and how that can influence future things, like someone developing PTSD from experiencing a traumatic incident, like maybe in combat, for example, and how that then can lead to other issues that come along with that very often, things like substance abuse or the suicide epidemic or any number of other issues that seem to impact this veteran community. I can almost seem like it's a little spark in childhood, and then it kind of balloons out into a much, much bigger issue when you start dealing with adult traumas in terms of, you know, combat, or it doesn't have to be combat. It could be any other, you know, major event that maybe triggers some of these beliefs and other things that you might have going on in your mind and your body later on in life. So has there been any work kind of talking about that correlation between those?
The correlation that really makes sense to me, and that what seems to come up in the lives of the clients that we've worked with, is that these things happen in our lives to help us to bring up what needs to be healed. And so when you have someone who has this, you know, trauma from childhood, and they've grown up to be, you know, they become, you know, a soldier, and they go off to war, and they're in that type of an environment that is so ripe for just bringing all of that stuff up. I would say that is for them, that's their journey. That's part of their journey, to be able to bring up what needs to be healed in such a, When I say ideal way, I'm not saying that war is ideal or anything, because war stinks. But unfortunately, because we need to deal with it, for someone to be able to be in that environment, you know, that's sort of almost a really kind of perfect way to be able to access their own trauma, but and to be able to once and for all to deal with it and heal it. And again, of course, they need to have the tools and the resources then to understand what's going on. And unfortunately, before a lot of this research has come along, you know, people were kind of left with not even being believed, you know, like they're just told to get over it, right? Oh, you're home now, get over it, right? Okay, great, thanks. It doesn't do me any good. Because I have these very real things going on. My family, you know, is experiencing it all with me. There's so much. And so, yes, I think that's really what's going on, because then you have other circumstances where people are experiencing trauma as adults that just shows up a little different. It might come up in their dog and, you know, they kind of end up sort of what they used to call it shell shocked, right? So the people feeling shell shocked from a boss, and that boss is bringing up, well, you know, a lot of times it is about dad or mom, because when we're birthed to 7 years, well, gee, they're all around all the time.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a fact of life that they're the ones who are going to have that heaviest influence. And so again, that's that real, you know, if you're trying to figure out what's going on, look at them, you know, and if they're around to talk to, great. If they're not, you know, just talk to older siblings or whoever really remembers them well to help you figure out, mom had a tendency to kind of like stuff her feelings in and then explode. You know, I mean, just examples like that. That's no wonder, you know, I've got this going on.
Right, exactly. And the way, when you were talking about this, the way I thought this process is kind of like, if you've ever been to the beach and there's all the sand down underneath the water and everything like that. And when you go and like, kick your foot under the water, it picks up a lot of the sand, right? There's this big event that takes place, and it's normally the sand is just hanging out there. It's happy where it's at, and everything's equilibrium is achieved, and everything's just fine. But then this big foot comes and kicks everything up, and it just stirs up a whole cloud of sandy dust or whatever you want to call it in the water. And I sort of think about that like these childhood memories and the things that have happened in childhood, you've kind of figured out a way to just exist with them kind of sitting down there under the surface. They're there, but they're not super top of mind or anything like that. They're just kind of there. But then this big traumatic thing might happen. Something, you know, if you're in combat, I'm just using that for an example. It doesn't have to be combat, but you know, something traumatic happens to you, and that just kicks up not only the main emotion that is taking place right now of this fearing for my life, or, you know, all these other traumatic things that might be occurring, but it's also kicking up all this other stuff that is coming along with it. That's kind of how I envisioned it as I was hearing you speak about this.
Yeah, that's a beautiful analogy. I might use that sometime. I think
please do.
Really great way to describe it. So I've talked about the discovery side of the body memory process. I'm going to talk about the homework now for a moment. I want all your listeners to know that there's so much hope. There really is so much hope. And you are powerful. You know, always know that you have so much power within yourself to change. You know, we're not, you know, David used to say, well, you know, the bad news is you created it. You know, the good news is you created it. And so now you can, you know, you can create something new. The whole sort of philosophy of the, if you will, of how David put together the homework is about emptying what he calls emptying the cup. The cup is full. You can't put anything else in it, right? If I like to talk about the story of the master and the student, and the student says, you know, master, I want you to teach me everything you know. And the master is pouring the cup of tea, and it pours over outside the cup. Master, my cup is full. Yes, so is your mind. I can't teach you anything, right?
Okay.
And so David created the homework for the body memory process based upon the idea of emptying the spiritual, the physical, and the mental cup from what was going on, right? So the whole idea is you've done the discovery work, and you may not have discovered every single vow that you have, He said that, you know, the great thing about this is once you have the tools, once you know the process, you can use this whenever you need. It'll be like, oh, well, that, like every once in a while, like, I'm trying to think, I was driving somewhere recently and with my kids, and I said something like, well, I'm going to say it like it is. I'm not just going to keep my mouth shut like a good little girl. Or I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? But what you start to do is you all of a sudden your awareness is increased that, oh, wow, about what I say I am. And then you can hear yourself saying something and go, well, there's a vowel right there. I'm going to figure out exactly the wording and do the homework. And so that's really the beauty of it. So emptying the physical cup is what David termed disavowals. So we talk about the vowels. Now we do disavowals. Now, if you think about the whole idea of a disavow is to deny any, right? If you deny any responsibility, and so what you are doing is, you know, changing the energy there. Like, so this is the wording. So I have a vow, nobody wants me, right? So I disavow, nobody wants me. And, you know, you feel it. There's the emotion when it was created. You put the emotion in. Now that because you know, that's not true. It might have been true for the child, but now I'm an adult. And I know that, yes, I have family. I have friends. You know, that's something I decided back then. And so it's 2 or 3 times a day. I disavow whatever the vow is. You have a list of 20. You go down to, you know, your list of 20. And, you know, it's not difficult. It's about committing to the process. So if you skip a day, you know, you start over because you talk about the energy being in the body. Well, you're actually, you know, emptying, you're changing, you know, it's about this at a cellular level. You know, you're actually in the body renews itself. So if the body has that, you know, same old information, you know, it's going to hold on to that. What you want to do is let that go so that you can create in the moment as an adult. The emptying the spiritual cup is no surprise here about forgiveness. Very, very powerful. Lots of people out there talking about the power of forgiveness. So there is a process for that. And then there is an affirmation process. That's a little bit different than the affirmation process that others may be familiar with. So, okay, I want you to say, I'm a powerful woman. Okay, so, you know, every day make that statement. Well, we all know that when we make a statement like that, our brain starts talking to us about all the things that we've gone through our entire lifetime that have proven that statement wrong, right?
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, I recorded every, it's like, gee, I don't remember what happened when I was, but all of a sudden I make a statement like that and all these things start coming up that I remember actually in all these memories of all of these maybe bad experiences. And so the process is about working with pen and paper, kind of getting all that down and being able to sort of work that out, get it all down, you know, and that's a process that is about when you're complete with it. You know, when you're complete with it, then it's done. Maybe you take on, you know, you work with a different affirmation. So, you know, that's the body memory process. And then along you have what comes along with that is not only, you know, healing for what it is that I've decided that was getting in my way, you know, what these vows are, but then an awareness that you go forward with that is so valuable. If you're a parent, you'll interact with your children differently. You know, I had an experience recently where I caught myself saying something that I was like, ooh, that could be a vow. You know, that could turn into a vow. Because the message I was giving my daughter was that money was more important than her opinion, right? So I was going to have to throw this away because she didn't like it. And I got upset about that. And then I realized that, you know, she's watching me and she could get the message, you know, my opinion doesn't matter, or, you know, money's more important than, you know, than what I think or something. And then in her adult life, you know, that could have a negative impact. And so, you know, you just develop this awareness. And then, like I said before, you have these tools that you can, you know, not only help yourself, but, you know, you can help others as well. I'd like to say here too, I am looking for people who are interested in doing this work on themselves first, because that would be a requirement, is do the work on yourself first. And then interested in actually being able to be sort of what I call it, what David termed an apprentice of the work, to be able to do, you know, coaching for others to do the work, really, really looking to grow that network. Because David had a network, but then after David, you know, there's been, you know, a period of time, of course, that I needed to go through my own grieving process and move the children from Hawaii, you know, sell the house, buy a new house in the middle of a pandemic. So the work right now is, you know, largely about, you know, like what I'm doing now, really getting the word out. You know, I've been refining the multimedia course to be able to scale this so that people can do this and do this on their own. Again, because they don't have David, you know, Sohn to do this with them, you can do it, right? Anybody can do this on their own. So, but I am, sometimes it is important. Everybody can use a coach, right? Coaches are important. That's why there's so many life coaches out there to very specifically coach people through this process. So sure. Feel free to contact me, please, if you're interested in that.
Yeah. And where can people go to get in touch with you if they're interested in, like you said, becoming an apprentice or a coach, or even just for their own benefit to, you know, go through this process? You have that course that you have available as well. You know, where can people go to find all of this and get in touch with you if they're looking for more information?
Sure. So my website is bodymemoryprocess.com. So all together, bodymemoryprocess.com. And you can also reach me an email at info@bodymemoryprocess.com. And the website has a lot of information. There is an ebook, a free ebook download there. It's about 34 pages that gives you, you know, all kinds of, you know, background, pretty much what I talked about here and maybe some more, and, you know, links to the course, lots of information on the website. So yes, please do. I have a 20-minute free consultation. If someone's just kind of wants to dip in a toe, that's perfectly fine, and happy to talk to anyone and help.
Well, that's great. And I will have links to that and more in the show notes. You mentioned a couple books throughout this episode. I'll have links to those as well in the show notes, so people who are interested in checking those out, they can find those pretty easily. And I wanted to thank you, first off, for joining me and the audience today to share this process, but also for continuing the work that you and your husband have done for all those years and continuing it on, because I think, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, especially on this podcast, we like to talk to people about different approaches to solving certain problems, things that people are dealing with and trying to cope with. And there's no one size fits all solution. You know, the veterans who are listening to this, they very often are in the VA system and they're dealing with whatever the VA has to offer, but that may not be the solution for them. And so having other approaches like what you're doing here with the body memory process is just, you know, again, another example of there's something else out there for you that you can try, you can apply to your life, see how that helps. And hopefully it does help and you can move on and have a happier, healthier life without the burdens of, you know, the past childhood traumas or even current things that happened more recently. So, you know, I want to thank you for all of the work that you've been doing and for sharing it with us today. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for having me here. It's really been a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.